This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management, Mellon.com, and by the Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, online at shrm.org.
Let off the hook.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Turns out the Hewlett-Packard spying scandal may have been mostly scandal and not criminal. California has dropped all charges against former HP chairwoman Patricia Dunn. Three other people pleaded no contest to misdemeanors. They had been charged with felonies. Federal investigators are still looking into the case. Dunn and the other executives were accused of using questionable methods to spy on their own board members and some journalists. We had a rebound on Wall Street and elsewhere. The Dow gained back 57 points to 12,133. The NASDAQ put on 21 to 2371. The S&P 500 added 9 points to 1387. The markets in Asia also rallied today, and European stocks opened quite a bit higher. Investors have been bailing big time on the subprime mortgage market. But investment bank Goldman Sachs is talking about going deeper into the subprime business. We're joined now by Will Andrews of BusinessWeek.com. Will, what are they doing?
The reason that Goldman has been so successful over time has been their ability to recognize opportunities that others haven't seen. You know, Goldman probably has been assessing the risks in this market. And, you know, quite frankly, I think they may be able to get some of these assets at fire sale prices based on the action that we've seen in the market and people basically marking down the shares either of these lenders or of the values of these loan portfolios.
The troubles that we've been hearing concerning the subprime market have really taken a toll on Wall Street and on markets overseas.
Right.
Are investors overreacting to this?
There's some element probably of overreaction. I think you do have to keep a sense of proportion about the size of the subprime market. Now, granted, there is a real concern, obviously, about the health of the U.S. housing sector and consumers' abilities to make basically timely repayments on their mortgages. That said, if you look at history, in the 1980s, foreclosures and delinquencies were actually at higher levels than they are now. I think in terms of history, this particular wave of foreclosures is not the worst that we've ever seen.
Okay. Well, when we look at it in the big picture and all the things that are happening right now, what should we be taking away from this and learning from this?
The first thing is that, you know, during boom times, lenders will definitely fall over themselves to produce loans. And there were probably could have been more oversight about the quality and the types of loans that were being written during this. You know, basically, if you pass the mirror test, they would give you a $200,000 mortgage. You know, I think there is a need to reexamine lending standards. And in fact, regrettably, after the horse has left the barn, there is some tightening going on, both by companies and regulators are also issuing standards that recommend tighter controls on these kinds of loans.
Okay, Will, thank you.
Sure thing.
Will Andrews is editor of the Investing Channel for BusinessWeek.com.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Introducing ThriveQ, an online tool that helps you know where you stand on your path to retirement. More at ThriveQ.com. By Medtronic, offering information to learn about sudden cardiac arrest and available life-saving therapies at Medtronic.com. And by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com.
Europe has been developing its own satellite navigation system, something like GPS. But things are starting to go wrong on this. Stephen Beard is with us from London. Fill us in, Stephen.
Europe's satellite navigation system seems to have lost its way, Scott. The Galileo project, it's a $3 billion plan to launch a European rival to the US global positioning system. It was due to become operational in 2010. Now the satellites are not expected to be in orbit until 2011, and the timetable is slipping daily.
Well, what's gone wrong?
Well, it seems that the eight companies behind the project, French, Italian, Spanish, German and British companies, have fallen out big time. According to the Financial Times, they're barely talking to each other. They've apparently quarrelled over money. What else? And behind all this, of course, is the big worry. Is this going to make any money?
Yeah, why does Europe need its own system in the first place?
Well, the fundamental thinking behind this, the European Commission says Europe needs its own satellite navigation system in case the US switches off GPS at a time of crisis, handing the system over for the sole use of the US military. That is theoretically possible. Critics of Galileo have dismissed it as an exaggerated, very expensive project torn apart by national rivalries. And given the well-publicised problems of Europe's best-known plane maker, one sceptic called Galileo Airbus in space.
OK, Stephen, thank you.
OK, Scott.
Our European correspondent, Stephen Beard. In this country, the FDA has ordered new warning labels for many prescription sleeping pills, Ambien, Lunesta, and 11 others. Warnings about obvious things like driving while asleep, and less obvious, allergic reactions. Ashley Milne-Tite has more.
In 2005, U.S. pharmacists filled out 43 million sleeping pill prescriptions. That's up 32% from 2001. And drug companies raked in $2.7 billion from those sales. But now that sleeping pill makers must loudly advertise how potentially risky their product is,
I think that maybe across the board, the category as a whole, may see some slowing of the growth as a result of this FDA action.
Mark Rivera of Strategic Pharma Consulting Group says it's not just insomniacs who use sleeping pills now. So do others, like business people who need to catch some shut-eye on the run. He says some may now think again. He says the FDA is asking companies not just to advise doctors of the pill's newly assessed risks.
They're asking companies to make the investment, to do the clinical trials and see if their drug is better or worse than the other guys.
He says how willing they'll be to comply is another matter. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
American Public Media.
Are you feeling...
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.